Welcome to Heaven Sent with Maureen St. Germain, talk radio to help you make each and every day a day of heaven on earth. Each week I bring you guests that will help you increase your connection and understanding of the world around you. I've written the book, You Are the Genie in the Bottle and Beyond the Flower of Life, and many meditation CDs such as Toning in the King's Chamber, the Macabre CD, Rainbow Angel Meditation, and others. My company has developed a highly respected scent healing product called Aloe Mandalas. These can be used to clear anger or rage, clear sorrow, pain, emotional pain, almost instantly just by smell. I also read the Akashic Records for clients who report to me the connection they have with me is amazing and highly accurate. Take advantage of our monthly specials by going to www.MaureenSaintGermain.com. That's MaureenSaintGermain.com. Our technical issues on this show this time might be causing us to sound a little garbled, and I am sorry for that, but we are all over the world this time. Our guest today is Lucy Wyatt. Lucy Wyatt is found at stonehousefarm.wyatt@dtinternet.com. That's Stonehouse. Stonehouse, farm, F-A-R-M, dot, W-Y-A-T-T, at btinternet.com. Lucy is the author of Approaching Chaos, but in the ancient archetype saves 21st century civilization. In her book, she discusses an alternative view of the ancient history by using well-documented evidence that may have been misunderstood or misinterpreted. Lucy believes that the ancient archetypes of civilization may have lessons for us now, and how to live in harmony with nature and in comfort. Lucy lives on a farm with a 600-year-old oak tree and cattle. She works with the earth energies and leads pilgrimages on equinoxes and solstices for the Gatekeeper Trust. So welcome, Lucy, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Maureen. My pleasure.
So Lucy is in the UK, and we have a lot of interesting things we want to ask you about, Lucy, and I'm going to give you a little more free rein and let you talk a little longer than we normally do to make sure that we get the story. So if you also will help us by keeping an eye on the clock, we've got about 6 minutes. Can you tell us, why do the ancient origins of cities even matter? What could be that important to us now?
The ancient origins matter, Maureen, because we've been telling ourselves the wrong story. And if we told ourselves the correct story, we would understand that there's a lot more information to be learned. That's of practical use that could help us. But because we're so arrogant and think that we're the most highly developed, most advanced people, we lose sight of that. And that's why it matters to go back to the beginning and understand.
So when you say the wrong information, what does that mean?
Well, what that means is that if you go back to the end of the Ice Age, like 10,000, 12,000 years ago, and the story we have told ourselves is that civilization comes out of a farming experiment, that we started to grow cereals and things like that, and that somehow a surplus occurred, and then man decided to exchange the surplus, and therefore from that kind of market grew and towns grew and cities grew. That's the story we've told ourselves, but there is no archaeological evidence for that at all. And I'm saying that actually cities did not grow out of the farming experiment. That's not actually what happened. But if you go to the British Museum in London, that's what they tell you. And it's not correct. We've fooled ourselves into thinking that. So what is it that developed civilization? What is it that developed cities? Well, as far as I can tell, the first signs of cities were not farmers, they were priests. Where these priests came from, I cannot tell you that, because I don't look at things like Atlantis, Lemuria, or any of those things. I only look at the hard evidence, the archaeological evidence, and I don't know where these early priests came from. But what I have understood is that there were two distinct stages of farming. One was cereals, and that was in these mountainous areas. And there are other reasons why they were in mountains. And then thousands of years later, then there was what they call the secondary product revolution in agriculture. And that coincides with the development of cities in southern Mesopotamia. I mean, I'm talking about that part of the world we now call Iraq, where there's been these wars going on, Saddam Hussein and all that. And about 6,000 BC, there was this change in agriculture, which absolutely coincides with the development of cities. And it's very instant. There's no evolutionary thing. 1 minute they're there, and it's all changed. And I'm saying that that change in farming happened because of cities and not the other way around.
So the change in farming, was that to more vegetables and crops that were a different kind of crop?
What happened was, the first change, which is earlier, when it's just cereals, it was the change from what they call wild to domestic crops, just cereals this time. And the change there is a question of convenience. The difference is a difference in one single gene. In a wild crop, when you sow the wild crop, when it's ripe, the wind takes it and spreads it. In a domestic variation, the crop waits to be picked. It waits for a human being to pick it. And for this to happen naturally would mean probabilities of 1 to 2 million times it happening. I mean, a very, very small chance. They have calculated it would take 20 to 30 cycles, 20 to 30 years for that change to happen naturally. So my thinking is that it was a deliberate genetic modification of a crop in about 7 or 8,000 BC to make it convenient to pick. What happens later in the secondary product change, which coincides with cities, is that then you have the change with animals. And then all of a sudden you can take milk from a cow, you can ride a horse, you can take wool from a sheep. Before that, a sheep had a coat like a deer, and you couldn't take wool from it. It wasn't useful. And these animals were suddenly smaller, more docile, changed. Secondary product basically means that you make milk and butter and cheese and take wool and weaving, and those are the secondary products. And that's what coincides with cities. And my understanding is that that was deliberate modification of those animals in order to produce those changes. That's how the two stages occur.
So the ramifications are substantial. We keep finding in history that the history we know and understand, or the science we know and understand, is really up to those who are the current ruling category. So what do you attribute that dramatic a shift to?
It's very hard to explain that, because there are obviously no records that really tell you what people's intentions were, what their motives were. But my personal hunch, although I don't write about it in my book, my personal hunch is that these operations that they had in the mountains where these early cereals were grown, that they decided to move their operations south to be by the coast, so that they could more easily trade and move stuff around. That's my personal hunch. I mean, obviously, it's just conjecture. I have no actual idea why it appeared further south. absolutely fascinating. And when we come back, we will discuss or ask Lucy what happened to the knowledge of the original city builders and how can we apply that knowledge today. You are listening to Maureen St. Germain on Heaven Sent with Maureen St. Germain. We'll be right back.
For pet parents who value quality natural nutrition, Wellness Natural Food for Dogs and Cats offers an ideal nutritional balance of carefully chosen, authentic ingredients in every recipe. True wellness means every ingredient has a purpose, and you can trust the quality of all the ingredients in wellness from their source to your pet's bowl. To learn more about the difference wellness pet food can make and to locate a pet specialty retailer near you, go to wellnesspetfood.com. That's wellnesspetfood.com. Wellness Natural Food for Pets. This is where true wellness begins.
Hi, I'm Don Brecky. I chose 2 years ago to get on the Take Shape for Life program. I lost 30 pounds and kept it off over 2 years. I have more energy. I get out of bed without backaches. It's been a life changer.
Hi, I'm Dale Gardner. With the Take Shape for Life program, me and my wife lost 90 pounds together, and that was 2 years ago, and we feel great.
Get healthy with the Take Shape for Life program. Get clinically tested products from Medifast and support from a free certified health coach. Visit simpletolose.com to learn more. Results will vary. Consult a physician before beginning weight loss program. Call or go online for complete program and discount details.
TransformationTalkRadio.com. TransformationTalkRadio.com. Transforming the world one listener at a time.
Are you feeling stuck? Do you want to be free from fears and doubts and finally feel good about yourself, but you just don't know how to get there? Dr. Schaub's Accelerated Breakthrough Program provides you with the tools and solutions to go beyond your limitations and achieve self-empowered confidence. Call for your free phone consultation at 866-903-MIND. Visit CellularWisdom.com. That's CellularWisdom.com.
Reservage Organics offers you the most advanced anti-aging product available. Our organic-based resveratrol formula, brought to you from the heart of our exclusive vineyards in southern France, has been clinically proven to reactivate your longevity gene and help preserve your youth. By including Reservage Resveratrol in your daily regimen, you can enhance cardiovascular function, metabolism, mental acuity, and collagen production. If you want to regain your youthful radiance and enhance your longevity, do so with the world's finest resveratrol from Reservage Organics. Why wait? Visit your local retailer and start the anti-aging process today. Reservage Organics, committed to the extension of youth naturally. Available online at Reservage.com and at the Vitamin Shop, Vitamin World, and Whole Foods Market. Visit Reservage.com and feel vitality today.
We're back. This is Maureen St. Germain, and you are listening to Heaven Sent with Maureen St. Germain, Talk Radio, to help you make every day a day of heaven on earth. Our guest today, Lucy Wyeth, has written a book called Approaching Chaos and speaks to us about the reinterpretation of history and the history of civilization and the history of farming and how we understand it today may be completely skewed according to looking at this remarkable shift in agriculture in a new way. So I promised I would give Lucy a chance to tell us about that, but before we do, I want to remind you, my guests, that every month on our website, at www.MaureenStGermain.com, we have monthly specials on our Arum and Dallas and products that give you big discounts and opportunities to get things that you have had your eye on at a special price. So please check it out.
and consider the possibility that these arrow mandalas can help you heal your life. So, Lucy, when we left off a moment ago, we asked, what happened to the knowledge of the original city builders?
So the knowledge went from Iraq, which is then called Mesopotamia, at the end of the 4th millennium BC, so about 3000 BC, went to Egypt. Because after that, the Egypt that we know as the amazing civilization, then that occurs after that time. There was a big global catastrophe, and the civilizers basically split up and went from places. So from 3000 BC onwards, we see that that great thing happened in Egypt. And Egypt has been the most amazing example of the archetype, and it lasts for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. But as Egypt started to decline at about the time of the change from Bronze Age to Iron Age, in about 1200 BC, then Egypt becomes vulnerable to other very powerful armies and tribes who want to invade, but they know that they have this secret knowledge, which includes the knowledge of how to move the big stones, the megaliths. They were able to move giant weight, many, many tons, 500 miles from the quarries at Aswan in upper Egypt, down to the Great Pyramid at Giza, down by the Nile Delta. They didn't want that knowledge, that secret knowledge, to fall into the wrong hands. So basically, at around the time of when the Romans are powerful and all of that, that knowledge does go underground. It does become secret knowledge. And that's why we have really lost touch with that information, because we are very much dominated by the Greeks and the Romans, who then came on afterwards. And they were not given these secrets. And that's why we've got the wrong end of the stick, and we have had the wrong kind of story about our past. We really understand so much about our ancient past through the eyes of the Greeks and the Romans. And if they didn't understand something, they didn't pass on good information to us. And that's why we need to reconnect, rediscover what those Egyptians knew and what the Mesopotamians knew. And in America, the Central America, the Mayans and people like that, they have this knowledge too. And that also went underground and became secret. So it has become difficult to access, and we haven't rediscovered the anti-gravity information that they must have had about moving these big stones. They must have known how to interfere with things, to interfere with gravity, to be able to move these things long distances. I don't believe in the thousands of slaves argument at all. I don't think that's an engineering possibility. We have hemp rope, age, not Iron Age, that's later. And so they must have had a technique that involves something to do with quantum physics, something to do that understands these anti-gravity things. And in our zero carbon search, that's what we need to rediscover. So we're always looking for ways to save the world and using different technologies, and these ancients had that knowledge, and we need to respect them and respect the reasons why it became secret, and try to improve ourselves so that we can take on that knowledge again and behave in ethical ways and not be like the Romans, and where everything end justifies the means, the power of Rome, the glory of Rome. And that thinking still dominates us so much. We need to understand how we are all interconnected and have a holistic view of everything, which is how the Egyptians looked at life. And that's the thinking that we need to rediscover and reconnect with. It's why it's so important to us that we understand that our ancient past had all this wisdom and knowledge, practical knowledge, as well as spiritual knowledge. And that's why I've written the book, basically.
Yes. Well, our guest last week, Robert Duvall, talked about rediscovering much of our ancient history and reinterpreting it as well. And it's very interesting how your knowledge ties into it. And, you know, the big compelling question is, how do we apply this information in today's society? I mean, people are so ingrained in believing the version of history that they've been taught that's been culturally imbued in the way we think, in the way we look at life, in our plays, in our theater, in our movies. How do we even begin to apply that ancient knowledge today?
Well, I think that there are several ways this could happen. One is that if there are certain people who are interested, and there are many more people these days who are very interested in this kind of thing, who are growing in their respect for the ancient past, that these people will start to reconnect with that knowledge. And then if we were to have some appalling catastrophe, which meant that our cities were no longer able to function as they do now, then people might start to say, let's have another look. Let's try and rebuild, reconstruct, but reconnecting with that ancient knowledge. And the point about it is that if there were some appalling catastrophe that could affect the planet, we don't have to go back to living in caves and being like cavemen. We don't have to go back to a stone age. We can go back to living in cities. That's the point. But it's living in cities with a greater respect for nature, and understanding that everything has a soul, everything has an aura, animals have souls, animals have auras, plants do, trees do, and living with that great respect. And that's the thing that's been missing from our modern lives for too long. So I don't think that we're going to change society. I don't think you can change society. But if society is changed by an external event, such as a massive coronal projection from the sun and all the electrical transformers being knocked out. You know, the American Academies of Science have published reports on what they call a high-consequence, low-frequency event, which is the massive ejection from the sun and huge solar flares, which would take out the transformers for 4 to 10 years. No electricity for 4 to 10 years. Our civilization would soon collapse. But if there are enough people who have access to alternative knowledge, alternative ideas of how to survive, and they reconnect with the archetype of cities, we can rebuild in comfort and in harmony. And that's really my point. We can't change the way people think, but they would be forced to change if they were faced with catastrophe. That's really my point. And my point is, my book is a way of saying, prepare yourself. Be aware that we live in this very vulnerable state, where if anything major happens to our fuel supplies, our electricity or our oil supplies or whatever it is, beware that your standards of living could just disappear overnight. And that's the thing that I am trying to persuade people. I do a lot of campaigning in my county of Suffolk here in England on defensive food strategies, because at the end of the day, we can build a shelter, but we can't eat grass. And so we need to think about how we improve our food supplies, and that I think is really, really critical. But again, if we were to reconstruct civilization, we could look at how our buildings are built and incorporate sacred geometry. We could look at how we treat domestic animals and treat them with greater respect. There's so many things that we could do in terms of rebuilding that would take us in a much better direction. But yes, I think it would take some horrific catastrophe for people to really listen and really change. And all that people like myself can do is beacon of light and say, look, there are alternatives. We can keep that knowledge. We can reaccess it.
It sounds like the primary function is the big picture. And I'm so grateful to Lucy, author of Approaching Chaos, can be reached at Lucy at approachingchaos.co.uk. That's Lucy, L-U-C-Y, at approachingchaos, approachingchaos.co.uk. I thank you for being my guest this day, Lucy, and thank you so much, listeners, for being with us. You can listen to us every Friday at this time on the Dr. Pat Network. This is Maureen St. Germain.